Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Soita Daf Mem Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the Mishnah that you'll find 18 lines from the top, approximately a third of the way down the page. On the side, we have a Nosei/Mivneh heading, the Nosei being the topic and Mivneh being the structural note. A diamond appears, one of our series markings, and we've indicated Divrei HaShotrim, the words of the Shotrim. These are officials that serve as the police. B'mi Shechoizer Min HaMilchama. Who is qualified, or for whom is it acceptable to return from battle? In other words, avoid continuing into the battle, and rather return home. The topics are alluded to in the Torah itself, and they cover an issue of bias, a house, building of a house, a new house, and a kerem, a plantation, a vineyard, isha, a newly married individual. The examples would come clear as we go into the Gemara itself. So first the Mishnah, V'dibru ha-shoitrim el ha'om le'mor, after the Kohen Mashiach Mechama, who was featured in the previous Mishnah, says his words, the Shotrim continue, and they say, Miho ish asher bono bayis chodosh velo chanocho, he who built a new house and did not live in it, yelech v'yoshov lebeiso, he is entitled to return and not continue into the battle. Echad haboine beis hateven, beis habokor, beis ha'etzim, beis ha'otzoros. When the Torah says bias, the oral law comes and includes not just a house, but even a straw storage facility. Teven being straw, that which you feed animals. An animal stall where cattle live. A wood supply facility, a beis otzoros, a storage structure. All of those are considered under the heading of bias of the Torah, where there is an entitlement to people to return and not go into battle, not to serve in that particular battle. Echad haboine ve'echad alokeach ve'echad ayoresh ve'echad shenosan lo matana. And as far as means of acquisition are concerned, even though the Pasuk speaks about bona bias, one who built the house, it's not limited to the one who built the house. It could be one who purchased the house, one who inherited the structure, one to whom it was given as a gift. You are the new owner of a facility, of a structure. And that entitles you to withdraw from going into battle. Umiho ish asher noto kerem velo chilolo. Again, a quote from the Pasuk. And the Pasuk describes someone who planted a vineyard and did not redeem the fruits of the fourth year yet. Chilolo has to do with redemption of fruits, a vineyard in its first 3 years. The fruits are orla, are prohibited. And in the fourth year, though one is allowed to eat the fruits, he must bring the fruits to Jerusalem. If he doesn't do that, he has another option. He can redeem the sanctity of the fourth year fruits onto money and bring the money and to Jerusalem and buy food there. The Pasuk is describing someone who hasn't done that yet. And Echad hanoteh kerem ve'echad hanoteh chamisha ilnei maichol. Even though the Torah speaks about a kerem is technically speaking a vineyard, a place where grapes grow. The halacha accepts even other fruit trees. If one planted five ilonei maichol, five fruit-bearing trees, v'afilu mechamishas haminim, even if each tree produces a different variety of fruit. The owner, the one who did that, who owns these, is entitled to return from the battle. Echad anoteh v'echad amavrich v'echad amarkiv v'echad alokeach v'echad ayorish v'echad shenasan lo matona. As far as means of planting are concerned, whether it be someone who put the sapling in the ground, whether it's someone who is mavrich. Mavrich is a process where you take the branch of an existing tree and you bend it in the middle, that part you put in the ground, you cover it with dirt, and the other tip sticks out, and what happens in the course of time, a new root system develops from that part of the branch that was bent and placed and covered with dirt. So that's it's like a new planting. And markiv has to do with grafting. So that if you had a tree and you grafted a branch onto that tree, that's called markiv. That produces, of course, a new growth. And as far as means of acquisition, the Mishnah says whether you purchased it or new trees, or you inherited them, or they were given to you as a gift. Umi ho'isha sher eras isha, a man who entered the first stage of matrimony with a woman. Echad hamares es habsu, echad hamares es ho'almona. Whether the erusin is with a virgin girl, one never married before, or you offered marriage to an almona, so that you gave her money or something of money value, establishing the initial erusin stage of marriage. Afilu shomeres yovam, a man who is now eligible to marry his widowed sister-in-law. As a result of his brother dying, leaving no children. Even someone who merely heard that his brother died in battle, so the surviving brother can leave the battle and go home, because he is now eligible to marry his wife, that is, the wife of the deceased. Kol elu shoim in divrei Kohen, Marche, Milchoma, V'Choizrin. All of these, the examples that we've learned till now, are the words that one hears from the Kohen concerning the rules of battle, and they go back, they leave the battle. However, they don't go back and are exempt from all public duty. U'mesapkin mayim u'mozon u'mesaknev sadrachim. They continue, though, providing water and food and caring for road repairs. There's another category of people, v'elu she'enon choizrim. We've highlighted with a double underline and under the mivneh heading on the side, chalukois, distinctions, be'inyan p'tur, hishtatvus b'milchoma. So the first category are those that go back. They went toward the battle, and then they, upon hearing the words of the Shotrim, who reflect the instructions given to them by the Kohen Meshuch Mechoma, so they return home. There are those that don't return home, and they are as follows. We've noted Ve'elu She'enon Chozrim. These are people that are not entitled to return home. Abone Be'sharach Sajim Upeses, one who built a gatehouse. Gatehouse is a type of little booth in which a guard would occupy it in his role as guarding some other facility. So his booth is called a beishar. It's not designed for dwelling. Achsadra is a type of open porch. Mirpesis is a balcony. Hanotea, one who planted arba ilne maichol, or v'chamisha ilne srak. He planted four fruit-bearing trees, not enough. Or five trees, but they're non-fruit-bearing. Those kind of people must continue into battle. Hamachsir es grushoso, a man who returned his divorced wife. He took her back. He remarried her. Almona l'kohen gadol, a widow who married a kohen gadol, even though it's a new marriage for the kohen gadol, but it's prohibited. A kohen gadol is not allowed to marry a widowed woman. Grusha v'chalutza l'kohen hedyot, or a marriage between a kohen and a divorcee, or a woman who received chalitza. Mamzeres u'nesil Yisrael, a Jew who married a forbidden wife, an illegitimate wife, or a woman from the Nesinim people. Bas Yisrael l'nosin, l'mamzer l'nosin, lo hoyachozer. Or if a mamzer, let us say, was going into battle, or a nosin, and he had just married a Jewish woman, a regular kosher Jewish woman, that's a forbidden marriage. He's not entitled to withdraw from the battle. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, af haboine bayis al mechoinoi lo hoyachozer. Rabbi Yehuda describes a person who rebuilt a house that had fallen down on its original spot as it originally was. That's not considered a new house. The Pasuk made reference to a bayis chadash, something new. But here it's the original structure simply rebuilt. He doesn't go back. Rabbi Lozer Omer, af habone bayis levenim b'shoron lo hoyachozer. A person who built a brick house in the Sharon region of Israel. It's explained later, we don't see this in the Mishnah, but it was a very muddy, marshy type of land, and houses there would end, if you built them out of bricks, they would end up sinking into the soil, and they wouldn't last very many years. So someone who built a brick house in Sharon wouldn't be entitled to go back. That's not considered one of the exemptions. It's not falling under the category of the Bona Bayis Chodesh exemption. Elu she'en zozin mimekomon. Here we have a new list. These are people that don't even advance forward to the battle lines to hear the words of the Moshuach Milchoma and the Shotrim. Bona Bayis v'chanacho. Here's someone who built a house, and it's he started living in it, but he did not live in it for a year. He's within his first year of living there. Nota kerem v'chilalo. He planted the vineyard and he even redeemed the fruits, but he hasn't finished eating them. He's in the it would appear that he's in the fourth year and has already redeemed the fruits, but he hasn't, as we say, hasn't benefited from that yet. Hanoise es arusoso. One who consummated his marriage with the Arusa. We mentioned the Arusa, Arusin represented the first stage of marriage. Here is a person that went to the marriage canopy, the chuppah. He consummated his marriage, and he hasn't experienced a year with his new wife, though. Hakoinis es Yevimto, likewise one who married the Yevama, the surviving, the widowed sister-in-law. Shinemar noki ye lebeso shono achas. That's the pasuk that he's to be in his house for 1 year. The words of the pasuk are explained now by the Mishnah. That, by the way, if you look at the side, we have the pasuk quoted in its entirety. Dvarim perik chof dalid pasuk hey. Ki yikach ish isha chadasha lo yetze batzava v'lo yavor olov l'chol davar ye noki l'beiso shona echas v'simach es ishto asher lokach. So the Mishnah goes on to say l'beiso. The pasuk said noki ye l'beiso. That's ze beiso. That's a house. Ye ze karmo. That's a reference to the vineyard. V'simach es ishto, zu ishto. This is a reference to his wife. Asher lokach, that expression, lahavi es yevimto, to include the yibum marriage. These people, ain maspikin Mayim Umazon, they're not expected to supply water and food. The Ain Mesaknim Mesadrochim, nor do they engage in road repairs. As we mentioned in our previous shiur, we highly encourage the familiarity with the psukim in Dvarim Perek Chof Psukim Aleph through Tes, the section of the Torah that deals with this whole topic of battle, exemption, the announcements made by the Kohen Moshuach Milchama, and the Shotrim. The Gemara continues, Tana Rabbanan V'dibru HaShotrim Yochol Dvorim Shalatzman. When it says that the Shotrim, the police officials speak, does it mean they speak their own words? Kishomer V'yosfu HaShotrim. The Pasuk later says, and the Shotrim add, that's in Pasuk Ches, Hare Dvarim Shel Atzman Omer, those are words that started, that initiated with the Shotrim, that they are expected to say. However, so what is the contents of Psukim Hay through Zion represent? B'divrei Moshuach Melchoma Hakosu Medaber. That's a reference to words that are initially communicated by the appointed Kohen, the anointed one for battle. Okay, so how do you combine this, the Kohen Moshiach Muhammad and the Shotrim? Kohen Medaber v'Shoter Mashmia. With regard to that which you see in Psukim, Hey through Zion, those are words that the Kohen Moshiach Muhammad says in a conversational tone to the shoter, to the police. And the shotrim, they say it aloud for the entire assembly to hear, the assembled troops. As the Gemara goes on, we're going to see three Tanaic sources that might appear contradictory, but the Gemara will resolve them based on different sections of Psukim. Tani Chada, one source tells us, Kohen Medaber v'Shoter Mashmia, the Kohen Moshiach Muhammad speaks, and the Shoter, he makes it heard to the public. Tanya Idach, Kohen Medaber v'Kohen Mashmia, the Kohen is the initiator, and he is also the one that makes it heard by the public. V'Tanya Idach, Shoter Medaber v'Shoter Mashmia, the third source refers to the Shoter speaking, initiating the words and also enabling it to be heard by the masses. So at this point, it would seem that you have three sources that don't agree with one another. Omar Abaye, Ha Ketzad. How do we resolve these three sources? So the answer is Mi Venigash Ad Vidibru, from Psukim. In Perek Chof, Psukim Gimel and Dalid, that is where the Kohen speaks, and the Kohen is the one to make it audible. Mivadibru Ad V'Yosfu, a reference to Psukim Hei Vav and Zion, that's Kohen Medaber V'Shoter Mashmir. The Kohen says these words, these Psukim, over to the police, and the police, the Shoter, is the one that makes it heard, says it over in a loud voice. Mivyosfu V'Elech, that's a reference to Pasuk Ches, Shoter Medaber V'Shoter Mashmia. Those are words, those are instructions that the Shoter initiates. He doesn't receive them from the Kohen Moshiach Muhama. As we said, the contents of the Psukim is something that everyone should open up a Chumash and familiarize himself with. Mi o ish asher bono bayis chodosh v'chulei tonu rabbonon asher bono. The pasuk says, "He who built ainli ela bono." From the strict reading of the words, I would think only one who physically built the house. Lokach purchased v'yorash inherited v'nitan lo b'matona received as a gift minayin. How do we know that they are included in the we'll say battle exemption? Talmud lomar mi ho ish asher bono bayis. The expression ho'ish is an inclusionary expression to include beyond just the one that built the house. In the yellow bias. Well, the pasuk again refers to a house. Minayin l'rabos, how do we know to include other structures or house-like structures, but they're not actually built for a daily family dwelling? For example, Beis HaTeven, Beis HaBokor, Beis HaEitzim, Beis HaOtzaros, all of these points we saw in the Mishnah. How do we know to include them as being a basis of exemption? Tamad lomar asher bono mikol mokom. It doesn't say in the pasuk, for example, bias asher bono, but rather it says asher bono and then the word bias. So until you get to the word bias, you're reading the words asher bono. That's not limited to house. Hence, we have a right through the power of the oral law to include these additional structures as the basis of a battle exemption. Yochol shani marbe, can I think to include also af habona beisharach sadru merpeses, the building of these structures, the guardhouse, open porch, and balcony? Tamad lomar bias. So the word bias excludes these three suggestions. Ma bias haroi ledira, just like a house is something that is fit for a constant dwelling. Af kol haroi ledira, so to any other structure that has the potential for ongoing dwelling. Not so in the case of a guard booth, an open porch, or a balcony. Rabbi Elazar ben Gavomer, bias kemashma'o. The word bias is to be taken literally. Lo chonach velo chanocho. There's a vav in the word, in that word, chanoch velo chanoch. It says, asher bono bias velo chanocho. That is a limitation expression, prat ligazlon, to the exclusion of someone who stole a house. So, well, for him it's new, he just stole it, but he doesn't have an exemption of returning from the battle. So, Reb Elazar ben Yaakov, we see, is an opinion that's very, we'll say, literal in his reading of the psukim, and hence he doesn't include things that are not called strictly bias. According to Reb Elazar ben Yaakov, a person does not have an exemption from military service if the house that he is occupying is one that he stole. Well, what are we describing? We're describing essentially a sinner. He's a sinner. He's a thief. He does not have an exemption. Well, Lema delo Reb Yosef Glili. Should we say that Reb Elazar ben Yaakov is not in agreement with Reb Yosef Glili? De'i Reb Yosef Glili. Now, this is an opinion we haven't seen yet, but here the Gemara makes reference to it. He, Reb Yosef, holds Ho'omar v'racha levov, the pasuk that spoke about a faint-hearted individual as being eligible to return from battle, is really Zeha Misyore. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. May Averos Shebiyodo. He's someone who's fear-struck because of the sins that he has performed. One who is a sinner might very well be influenced to experience feelings of fear and not want to risk it going into battle. So, according to Reb Yosef Glili, someone who is a sinner is exempt, because he's what the Torah says is yorei, he's fear-struck and faint-hearted, according to the Tanaic source we saw with Reb Elazar ben Yaakov, who was not willing to offer an exemption for the house thief. Apparently, he doesn't agree with Reb Yosef Glili. Here, Reb Elazar ben Yaakov describes a sinner who's not allowed, who doesn't receive a military exemption. So is it so then that they're not in agreement with one another? The Gemara says not so. Afilu temo Reb Yosef Aglili, the source that indicates a person who stole a house is not entitled to an exemption, can agree with Reb Yosef Aglili. Kagon de Ovad Tshuva v'yoev domi. The thief actually repented and he paid money to the victim, and therefore to describe him as someone who would be faint-hearted because of sins, he's not faint-hearted because of sins, he's done repentance, and therefore he must continue into battle and doesn't receive that exemption of called Yorei Varach Alevov because of his penitence. Ihochi, if that's the case that he paid for the house, Havilei Lokeach V'Lahader, well then he is a purchaser of a new house. Based on his being a purchaser, he should be entitled to return. Why does it say in the source Eino Choser? The Gemara answers, Kevan de Meikora B'Toiras Gezela Osa Liyodei Lo. Since Meikora means initially his acquisition of the house was through theft, it's true that he fixed the situation, he repaired the situation through monetary compensation, but his initial acquisition was through theft. Therefore, even though he pays for it later, he's not considered the lokeach of a house, the purchaser of a house, in the standard exemption sense of the word. Umiho isha shenoto kerem v'chulei. Here the Gemara will feature a discussion concerning the planting of a vineyard. Are we actually limiting ourselves to a vineyard? And further discussion concerning harkova, which is the process where a branch of a tree, of a specific tree, is inserted into the trunk of an original tree. The Gemara. That is, of course, a quote from the Pasuk, Tonu Rabbonan, Asher Nota, one who planted. Nota is the process of taking a sapling, putting it in the ground, covering the roots with earth, and hoping that it grows. So that is reason for an exemption, a return from the battle, one who planted a kerem, a vineyard. Ein li elo Nota. I see from the pasuk one who planted is entitled to the exemption. Lokach v'yorash v'nitan lo matom minayin. If he bought a kerem or he inherited a kerem, received something, a kerem as a gift, how do we know that he too would be exempt? Talmud lomar umi ho'ish asher nota kerem. And again, you see the expression ho'ish, which we saw in the case of the house, was an inclusive expression. Ein li elo kerem minayin l'rabos chamisha ilnei maichol v'afilu mishar minin. From where do I know to include in the exemption not only one who plants a vineyard, but also one who plants fruit-bearing trees of any kind, even if they're five different kinds? Talmud Loma Asher Nota. The Asher Nota is an inclusionary expression. Yochol Sheni Marbe, should I think to include even the following? Hanotea Arbo, Ilnei Maichol V'Chamisha Ilnei Strag, when he planted only four fruit-bearing trees, or five, but barren, non-fruit-bearing trees? No. Talmud Lomar Kerem. The word Kerem excludes those scenarios. A Kerem, technically speaking, could be a planting of trees as little as five trees in a specific configuration. That would be considered a Kerem, but you need to have five, not four. Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov Omer Kerem Kemashma'o. The word Kerem, it means a vineyard, and he is not willing to include other fruit-bearing trees as the basis of a military exemption. Lo chileo v'lo chilolo. The pasuk says, in using the vav, lo chilo prat lemavrich u lemarkiv. According to Rav Zeman Yaakov, the Mishnah, the pasuk that is, excludes a mavrich and markiv as being exempted from battle. We explained these procedures before. The mavrich had to do with the branch bending procedure, and the markiv is the grafting of a branch from another tree onto an original tree. The Gemara asks, but v'hana t'na, did we not learn in the Mishnah echad hanotea v'echad hamavrich v'echad hamarkiv, that from the scripture itself we know to include these additional procedures, not just one who planted, but one who did havracha, one who did harkova? So in order to resolve, we'll say, these Tanaic sources with one another, we have approaches. You'll see in diamonds the names first Rebbe Zera, and the second one is quite a way down on the page. You see there's a number 2 in the space between the Gemara and the Rashi, there, the last third or quarter of the page, you see Rav Dimi in a diamond. He also comes, quotes Rabbi Yochanan, resolving these sources. Omar Rebbe Zera, Omar Rav Chisda, Lo Kasha. There is no disagreement between the Brisa, which excluded military exemption for the Mavrich and Markiv, and versus the Mishnah that granted exemption for Mavrich and Markiv. Kan b'harkovas isur, kan b'harkovas heter. The Gemara is focusing on the harkova process, that is, grafting, taking a branch from one tree and putting it into the trunk of another tree. If it's two different varieties, in other words, you have a, let's say, a peach tree growing, and you take a branch from a plum tree and put it into the trunk of the peach tree, those are two different varieties of fruits. That is forbidden from the Torah. That's mixed breeding. It's in the general realm of kilayim, of mixed breeding, and hence forbidden. However, there's harkovas heter, where you have, let us say, a trunk and the branch from another tree of the same variety. The trunk represents a tree that has a certain, let's say, positive aspect to it. Let's say it weathers storms. It's a strong type of tree. However, the fruits that it produces are of poor quality. So you bring a branch from a high quality peach producing tree and put it into the trunk of a strong peach producing tree, and that is allowed. So that if you have two kinds of fruits, I should say two qualities of fruits of the same variety, and you want to join forces to benefit from both positive attributes, that's okay. That's harkovas heter. As you can see, we have a long bracketed section. You can use your bracket length indicator to show where they end. And if we skip momentarily, after hearing Rabbi Zera's resolution of the two sources, we go down Kios Rav Dimi Om Rabbi Yochanan Ha Moni Rabbi Lozer Ben Yankiv Hi. The end of the Tanaic source, and you might have assumed this even when we read the source, but the end, that line at the end of the source, that Prat Lemavrich Ulemarkiv, in fact, was a continuation of Rabbi Lozer Ben Yankiv, who is a separate Tanaic opinion differing from that of the Mishnah. As he says, as the Gemara says, Lo Omar Rabbi Lozer Ben Yankiv Hosom Kerem Kimashmo. Did he not show that we read the Torah in a, we'll say, a literal or a restrictive fashion? Kerem being a vineyard, and only for a vineyard is there exemption. So Hochanami, by the same token, Nota Kemashmo. The Pasuk said, Asher Nota Kerem. The word Nota is as it implies, planting a sapling. Notea in Mavrich u'markiv lo, but these other procedures, these other agricultural procedures, are not called notea. They have their own names, and therefore they're not included in the Torah exemption. So with the approach taken by Rebbe Lozer Ben Yankiv, you have a very restrictive approach, who receives the exemption, as opposed to our Mishnah, which is a broader approach. But there's no contradiction, it simply reflects, these sources reflect two different Tanaic authorities. We skipped a very long section of Gemara that we have in brackets. On the side, there's a double-starred note, and it reads as follows. We're reading in the margin, Achrei Hasograim, HaGemara Mevi'a Oid Yishuv Liyashev HaMishnah V'Braisa Bin Chazorah Min HaMelchoma Mishum Harkova. After the brackets, the Gemara presents the additional answer to resolve the two sources, which we already read. B'socha sograyim, within the brackets, a Gemara mevareres mahu harkovas heter. What is meant by Rabbi Zero's answer when he says that the Mishnah, which affords a military exemption because of Harkova, it's Harkova's Heter. What is a Harkova's Heter? The Mishum Harkova Hu Choser Velo Mishum Ho'etz HaMekori, that the whole exemption is based on his grafting a branch into a tree and not an exemption for the original tree itself. In other words, the whole exemption is because of the act of grafting the branch onto the trunk, or into the trunk. As far as markings that shortly appear, you have a mivne, a structural note on the other margin. The double underline indicates shlavim. These are stages, levar, mara, harkovas heter. The mishum harkova hu choser. What is that harkovas heter? So we go through, as you can see, the highlighted words. You see the very standard Gemara form, ilemo elo lioilam. We're trying to figure out what is meant by Harkova's Heter, that it, the Harkova, is the basis of the military exemption, and not the actual planting of the original tree. The triangle that appears, Hezberim Lamao Harkova's Heter de Mishum Kachosrim. These are, after we went through stages trying to figure out what we're talking about, you'll see Rabbi Yirmiyah giving his take on things, and later Rav Nachum Yitzchok giving his explanation of what Harkovas Heter is. So the entire, we'll say, bracketed section is focused on a detail. It's focused on trying to understand Rabbi Zeiro's reference to a Harkovas Heter. And that's why this whole section is in brackets. Now, the Gemara. We continue in the bracketed section. Hai Harkovas Heter, Hechidomi. This Harkovas Heter, this permitted grafting that serves as the basis of a military exemption. What is it? Ilemo Yaldo bi Yaldo. Yaldo, in this context, means a young tree. A tree within its first 3 years. A fruit tree within its first 3 years is called Orlo. The fruit is prohibited. It's only in the fourth year can one entertain the possibility of eating the fruits. So if we're talking about taking a branch from a young tree, an orla tree, and grafting it into a tree that's been recently planted, it's a yalda as well then tepuk lei deboi mahadir mishum yalda rishona, then the military exemption for this person should be on the basis of the original tree planting, which itself is young. You don't need to exempt him because he did a harkova. Elo yalda bezikena. So rather, it must be a case where he took the branch of a young tree, of an orla tree, and grafted it onto the trunk of an old tree. The Gemara asks, could that really be a case of exemption? Va'omar Rabbi Avo, yalda shesibcha bezekeino. Sibcha means attached to. A young branch, right, from a young tree, that is, that's attached to an old tree, bot lo yalda bezekeino, v'ein bo din orla. It becomes, absorbed into, its identity is lost in favor of the old tree, the older tree. And this branch doesn't even have the laws of Orla pertaining to it. So there's no element of newness whatsoever. In our terms, there's no exemption whatsoever in a case like that of Yaldo Shesibcha Bezekena. So what is the case of Harkovas Heter that is the basis of a military exemption? Omar Rabbi Yirmiyah, Li'oilom Yaldo Biyaldo. In fact, it's a young branch into a young tree, and then you'll ask, well, why is the exemption based on the Harkova and not on the original planting? The original planting was of a tree, but not for its fruit benefit. True, it produces fruit, but you planted these trees to serve as a fence. There had been a breach in a wall, let us say, and you planted trees to block that breach. That's a siog, or koros means you planted the tree for its wood value. not for its fruit production. And therefore, it's not, as is the case in many areas of halacha, kavana, intent, is the main factor, not the physical planting of a tree. And here is a manifestation of such a case. Since you had no fruit intention for the initial planting of the tree, that can't serve as the base, cannot serve as the basis of your military exemption. So what can? Oh, when you took a branch from a similar variety tree and grafted it onto this fence tree, and you intended for the grafting to produce fruits, there you've got it. There's your exemption from military service based on grafting. And the source for this is Desnan Hanotel is Siogul Gros Potumina Orla. One who plants trees for fence purposes, during the first 3 years, the fruit that comes out from that tree is not forbidden as Orla. The fruits are not viewed. If you many times in Gemara markings, we like to emphasize how halacha supersedes reality. So if you can, I hope you can understand the following statement. In a tree that's planted for Sioga Koros, the fruit that comes out, the fruit is not fruit. And what do we mean by that? Physically, biologically, botanically, it's fruit, but it doesn't have the halachic distinction or the halachic ramifications of fruit. The Gemara asks, the Gemara's question here is based on, we'll say, analyzing a principle. Here, once again, Gemara learning forces the individual not to be, limited to translations and superficial explanations. Here is a very good exercise of, intellectual activity. When we spoke about Yalda into Zakena, we said there was there was no exemption. Why? Because the original tree was a tree itself, a zakena, a tree without exemption. It was already beyond. It was already old. So there's no exemption for old trees. So there was a case of grafting into an entity of exemption. What about the case we just described that we thought is going to be the basis of exemption, where the original tree, albeit young, but it was originally planted for fence purposes? Is that also not, in fact, parallel to the case of Zakena? Is it, in fact, not also a case of non-exemption? So why is it that when I graft Yalda into Zakena, there is no exemption, and yet you're saying here, if I graft Yalda into Yalda fence tree, there is exemption? Is it not so that the basic tree, though, into which the grafting is taking place, is a source of non-exemption? Now, we'll read this in the words. Umay shno Yalda b'zikena. What is different about the case of the grafting of a young branch into an old trunk? The botla, we say that the young branch loses its youthful identity, and hence no exemption. And the reason for that was because the basic tree was a zakena, was a non-exemption tree. Umayshna yalda biyalda, the lo botla. And yet here, where you take young branch into young trunk, but its purpose was for fence purposes, a non-exemption basis, and yet you say here the young branch doesn't lose its youthful identity. And he's allowed to go back, he's allowed to receive an exemption from the battle service because of the Harkova. The Gemara answers, there's a fundamental difference. Hasam, in the case of the Zakena, imimlich Allah, if he has just changes his mind, he says, he changes his mind, he makes some kind of mental decision that he wants the Zakena to be viewed as a young tree. Lav bas mahadir he is nothing to, there's no basis, you can't change, have a change of mind that would have any effect on achieving exemption in such a case. However, hocha imim l'chala, here, if you have a tree that you originally planted for fence purposes. But you had a change of mind, said, you know, I really want it for its fruit value. That original tree lends itself to such a change in mind. Bas mehadrihi. It is a tree that presents the capacity of actually affording a military exemption. Daha meikara lepiri kaima. Originally, it was a tree that God intended, we'll say, for fruit purposes. You decided to use it for a fence, but the potential for wanting it for its fruit purposes was there all the time. And in the event that you have that change of mind, so you're having a change of mind concerning a young tree for fruit purposes, that in fact is the basis of a battle exemption. So since the potential for this change of mind exists, the grafting that you do into such a tree doesn't lose its, we'll say, its youthful identity, and it can serve as the basis of a return. The Rashi explains. Let's look at Rashi, and you may have noticed that Rashi occupies in this perek both columns where you would have ordinarily found Tosfos. There's no Tosfos, but you see Rashi. So we're looking in the outside Rashi column, the lower quarter, Hasam Gabi Zekena, where we spoke about grafting a young branch into an old trunk, and there was no exemption. Lav Bas Imluchihi. It's not something that is the subject of a potential change in mind. Lachser v'lios yaldal shu machshava, that because you decided that you want to view the trunk as young, that through that it becomes young again. That does not work. Avol notel esyog, where you planted a tree, a young tree for fence purposes. E mimla chalo besof shnei orla lekaimo leperos. If you had a change of mind after a year or even 2 years, you said, you know, I want it. I'm happy that this tree is here because I can benefit from its fruits. I want its fruits. I have fruit intention. Chayevis Barla. It becomes obligated in the laws of Orla, which it previously had not been. Hilkoch Yalda de Komarkiv Begavo. Therefore, a young branch, a branch that you grafted into this fence-based tree, and the grafting you did for eating purposes, chayeves pa'orla. V'afagav de'lo imlich akomaisa, even if you haven't had a change of mind concerning the original tree, the original trunk, ha miha lachila hu. This grafting is for fruit-eating purposes. Umahanyo machshava, and your intention for fruit purposes is of consequence. The ikur didonami, even the trunk itself into which you've grafted this new branch, ihave choshev alo, have mahani machshava. Had you had a change of mind concerning it, it would have been consequential. V'afagav debishas netia lav lo chinota, even though when you planted it, the original tree, you didn't have fruit intention. So that the fact that the original appearance or planting of the tree was, we'll say, of a non-exemption nature, that doesn't establish that graftings that are done into it will also be non-exemption. Let's turn back to the Gemara. The Gemara gives a parallel to what we've just described. Midi dehave, meaning this idea of a fence tree that you had a change of mind concerning it, also has a change, represents a change in halacha. This is similar to the case of a'olu me'alehen, trees that grew on their own without your planting them. Disnan. Olu me'alehen chayovin ba'orla. If we look in the Rashi, where we left off, Midi davi ha'olu me'alein, debishas netia lekakavona. Trees that started growing on their own, there was no intent. They, by definition, they started growing on their own. So the fact that there was lack of, let's say, fruit intent at the time of initial growth, that is not the basis of establishing absolute or law exemption. Let's continue in the Gemara. The Gemara has a suggestion that it will reject. The Lukma, Bekerem Shel Shnei Shutfin. We have been asking all along, what is meant by a Harkovas Heter, where the Harkova is the basis of an exemption? Why not simply describe, we'll say, a case that's much more routine than the unusual cases of one who planted a tree for fence purposes or for wood purposes. Simply, there is the basic tree owned by one person, we'll call him Reuven, and someone comes along and joins up in a partnership with him, and he grafts a branch, and we'll call him Shimon. Shimon grafts a branch onto Reuven's tree. So Shimon, now by having grafted his branch onto Reuven's tree, Shimon gets a military exemption. Why not describe Harkovas Heter like that? The high Hodr Adide, Reuven will receive his military exemption because of his planting of the basic tree, and it's within it the first 3 years. The high and Shimon Hodr Adide, he'll get his exemption as a result of the harkov, of the grafting. So there's a separate exemption for grafting. That's what we've been looking for. Why not say this case? Omar of Papa Zosomeris, from the fact that this is not a suggested answer to describe Harkovas Heter, this shows us Kerem Shel Shnei Shutfin Ein Chozrin Olov Marche Ha Milchama, that a tree that's jointly held, jointly owned, is not the basis of a military exemption. The Gemara asks, my shno, what is different about this? Here there's an element or a concept of partnership which doesn't serve as an exemption, and yet in one of the other areas of exemption, the case of marriage, more specifically in the case of a yibum situation, where one brother dies leaving no children, and there are four surviving brothers that happen to go into battle, upon hearing of their brother's death, and the widow at home now is waiting for Yibum, each one of those brothers is a potential candidate for Yibum. They all leave the battle. So we're asking, what's different about a case of a tree partnership where we say there's no basis of exemption? And in the case of, we'll just say, for lack of better expression, a woman partnership, they're all partners in her, so to speak. And there is exemption. So let's read this in the words. Umay shno mechamisha achin umeis echod mehen b'milchoma dekulon choizrin, where there had been five brothers, one died in battle and left no children, that the all four other brothers go back because of the Yevoma. The Gemara answers, Hossam, in the case of Yibum, kol chad v'chad karino bei ishto. It's in we'll say, in potential, how many men does she marry? Obviously, she marries only one of those four brothers. At this point, at the point of the death of the first brother, at that point, I don't know who it is, but as far as exclusivity is concerned, each one of those surviving brothers can be referred, she can be referred to them as Ishto, as his wife, exclusively. I just don't know which one it is. Hacha, in the case of the trees in the vineyard, Kol Chad V'Chad Lo Karino Bei Karmo. When you look at any tree there, no one tree is exclusively owned by any one of the partners. Each tree is jointly owned.
And I know now we're going to be a little repetitive, but when it comes to the woman, we don't say that the woman is jointly owned by two Yivmen. Only one of them is going to be her husband, and she's going to be his wife exclusively. So that when the Pasuk speaks about the return from battle, it's talking about the return because of something that you have an exclusive connection with. If the trees are yours exclusively, so you go back. If the woman, the new wife, is yours exclusively, so you go back. In the case of the of Shimon grafting a branch onto Reuven's tree and them thereby becoming partners in the tree is not exclusively either Reuven or Shimon's. It's jointly held. And that's not what the Pasuk had in mind for exemption. Now we see Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok, another triangle, hence another explanation of what is meant by Harkovas Heter, that because of the Harkova one receives the exemption, and not because of the original plant. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok Omar, b'mavrich Elon b'yerek. Now, I can't explain this botanically. I can translate the Gemara, but for, let's say, an official botanical explanation of what is taking place, one would have to do further research. But what's described is a tree branch is grafted into an original yerek. Yerek is a vegetable. What the halachic definition of a yerek is, as opposed to an elon, it has to do with the fact that when you have a yerek, you remove the vegetation from a yerek, no new vegetation will grow back at that point. Whereas on a tree, when you remove the fruit from a tree, next year on that same branch, new fruit will appear. There are numerous halachic differences between an elon and a yerek. The concept of orla does not apply to a yerek, but it does apply to an elon. So here, he grafted an elon branch onto a trunk that is a yerek. V'hai tanahu desanya. The question might arise in your mind, can you do such a thing in the first place? After all, mixing different breeds together, different varieties together, is not something that is permissible. What about this? So this, in fact, is a machlokas tanoim, and we're focusing on the first of the two opinions that we see in this source. It says, Hamavrich Elon Beyerek. It's true that the word mavrich appears, but it might be a reference to markiv. Maybe the words are interchangeable. But what he did here is he grafted a branch of an elon into a trunk of a yerek. Rav Shmuel Leo Matir, he says it's okay to do that, and he quotes Mishum Rabbi Yehuda ben Gamdo Ish Kfar Akko. So Rabbi Shimon bases his heter on the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. The Chachomim say it's not permissible. So of course, in order to receive an exemption from military service, it has to be an act of permissibility. And it is, according to the first opinion. As you can see, the bracket accession is closed now, and we go back to the larger structure, and that is, we had the contradiction between Tanaic sources, our mission on the one hand saying there is exemption for Harkova, and the Tanaic source that indicated that from the word Veloch Chilolo comes to the excluding Mavrich and Markiv. So Kiyosa Rav Dimi Omar, Rav Yochanan, Rav Dimi, and the neighbor Rav Yochanan, to resolve that contradiction, says, Ha money, the source that says that Harkova is not the basis of return, Rabbi Lezer ben Yankiv, it's in accordance with Rabbi Lezer ben Yankiv, Lo Omar, Rabbi Lezer ben Yankiv, Hasam Kerem Kemashmo, did he not offer his
restrictive approach to the verses by saying that the word kerem is as it sounds, meaning only a vineyard and not other fruit varieties, that only the planting of a vineyard is the basis of a military exemption and not orange trees. Hachonami, so too here. Nota kemashmo, the Pasuk said nota kerem. Nota is the planting of an original sapling. Noteain, for planting a sapling, there is exemption. However, mavrich, umarkiv, different forms of, involvement with pre-existing trees, whether it's grafting onto an original trunk, or it's the bending of the branch of an already growing tree, lo, there is no exemption for that. So the source that in which Rebbe Elazar ben Yankiv's name appeared by saying kerem kemashmo, in fact, the continuation of that source is his opinion as well. The Mishnah disagrees, hence there's no contradiction, rather a divergence of opinions. As we go on in the Gemara, a double underline series marking appears, and on the side under the Mivneh heading, you can see these are Meimros Shel Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rebbe Elazar ben Yankiv. These are statements that Rabbi Yochanan makes in the name of Rebbe Elazar ben Yankiv, and this in effect is really a type of continuation of what we already mentioned. If you see just a couple lines up where we had the diamond, was Kiosa Ravdimi Om Rabbi Yochanan, there he explained the restrictive source as authored by Rebbe Elazar ben Yankiv. Here, Ravdimi quotes a maimer of Rabbi Yochanan in the name of Rebbe Elazar ben Yankiv. So let's continue in the Gemara. You'll see a number of, we also have used a squiggle underline just to show the repetition or the reappearance of Kiosa Ravdimi. Kiosa Ravdimi Om Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Elazar ben Yankiv. Yalda Pchusa Mitefach Chayeves Ba'orla Kol Shnoiseha. We'll call this a dwarf tree. It's so small that it doesn't rise more than a handbreadth. It's a miniature tree. It might be growing like that for many years. All of its years, it's chayev and orlitz to be, its fruit will be forbidden on a rabbinic basis. The mischazia kibas shosa, even though it might be 20 years old, it still looks like a one-year-old tree. And therefore, so as not to confuse the public by they're seeing you're benefiting from the fruits after 3 years, they'll see you picking fruit from a very small tree, thinking that it's still a year old tree, and they'll think that the laws of Orla don't exist. The Hani Mili, this rabbinic stringency will apply in the case of a vineyard with a very specific configuration. Shtayim keneged shtayim viachas yoitze zonov. That is just imagine four vines planted in a, we'll call it a square shape, each one occupying a corner that if you were to draw the lines together, you would form a square, and the fifth vine is coming out from behind it. So if you have that configuration, as opposed to, let's just say, five vines planted in a row, one next to the other, that is not what we're talking about. The concept of applying the law of Orla to a vineyard that's producing dwarf trees, that is true if they're growing in this configuration. Avol kule kerem, if you have an entire vineyard, row after row of vines that comprise a large a vineyard, then kola isle. Kola means, koil means it makes noise. What do we mean it makes noise? Everyone knows about, we'll say this, genetic defect that caused this stunted growth, but everyone knows it's more than 3 years old. So a dwarfed vineyard that's large in size with the vines growing row after row, and they're all dwarfed, people know that it's not a one-year-old thing, and you don't have this restriction, this rabbinic restriction. The Rashi, on the upper part of the standard Rashi column, the upper, let's say, less than halfway down, Kola Islay, HaKol Omrim, Kerem Yesh Leploni Mishunim Mikol HaKromim, everyone says that so-and-so has this odd vineyard. The Yodim Shizikain, everyone knows that it's beyond 3 years of age. Lahachinokat Shtayim, the Sovrlo Kemand Omar Bimsechas Brochas Kerem Vaitan, Shein, Orla Noheges, Benetio Achas, Elo Bekerem Sholem. This Rashi is referring to an entire discussion at the beginning of the sixth parak of Brachas, that this is in accordance with the opinion that the laws of the fourth year of Revai apply only to vines and not to other fruit trees, and hence the laws of Orla, just like the laws of the fourth year are an outgrowth, if you, in, pun intended, the outgrowth of the laws of Orla. Orla, according to this opinion, then is limited to vines, provided they're growing in a vineyard configuration and not as isolated grape vines. Let's continue in the Gemara. Ki Osur of Dimi, here we have another halacha that's here probably only because of the similarity in names, but not because of the content. When Rav Dimi came, he said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, quoting Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, "Meis toifes arba amos lekriyashma." If one is within four amos, within let's say 2 meters of a corpse, so you are not to recite kriyashma. If the, let's say it's getting late and you haven't said kriyashma, so distance yourself from there. But one who is within 4 amos of a corpse is not to recite kriyashma. Dichtiv lo eg lorosh cheref oseu. Literally, it means one who scorns or mocks the impoverished is embarrassing him. The concept of impoverishment here is reference to the dead. He's impoverished from mitzvah performance, and your performing mitzvahs within his 4 amos is a type of ridicule to the corpse, as if to say, hey, I can do mitzvahs and you can't. So within 4 amos, that is the mitzvah performance, in this case kriyashma, is not to be recited. Omar Reb Yitzchok, here we have the introduction of a new name that will appear in a, we'll say, a series form, and the bow tie highlights that, highlighting Reb Yitzchok. And as we go along, you'll see we continue quoting Rabbi Yochanan in the name of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Omar Reb Yitzchok, Omar Reb Yochanan, Mishum, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Chorgusa Hagedelo Bein Hoachin Asura Linose Laachin. Let's just describe this family setup. You have a man and woman that that married one another, and for each one of them, this is their respective second marriage. So that the woman had a daughter with a previous husband, and this man had a son with a previous wife. Their respective children are not related to one another whatsoever. The daughter had her set of parents, and the sons have their own set of parents. No overlap between the boys and the daughter in this picture. However, the mother of the girl and the father of the boys are now marrying one another as their own second marriages. Rabbi Yitzchok tells us that that girl who grows up, let's just say this marriage took place between the mother and father, took place when their respective children were rather young, so they're going to be growing up in the same house. People that live in the neighborhood, they don't necessarily know all of the family background here. They see a girl with boys growing up together. They think they're brothers and sisters. So Rabbi Yitzchok says that the girl cannot marry any of those boys, because it appears the Gemara's language was the mischazio. She appears ki achtayu, like their sister. We have a little chart on the side that that we call chorgoso. Chorgoso is in maybe in English it might be referred to as their stepsister. There, the boy's stepsister. That's a chorgoso. And the Gemara, though, rejects Rabbi Yitzchak's ruling, velohi. This is not true. The restriction is not true. If they want to marry, they can. Kola is le lemilsa. Very similar to what we said about the dwarfed vines before. People know about these things. And when they see that marriage taking place, no one's going to think that it's a brother marrying a sister. The Omar Rabbi Yitzchak, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Lozer ben Yaakov, Leket Shiko Peo, Sha'ason Begurin, Hukpu'u Lemaiser. Leket Shikon Peo, the names of different tithes that the impoverished are entitled to collect from fields. If a poor man gathered enough Leket Shikon Peo, he gathered a fair quantity of that, of those tithes, and he piled them up, ason begoren, that means he piled them up into a heap of grain. Hukpa'u lemaiser, that means he'll have to set aside a miser tithe from it. Let us understand that from the Torah perspective, leket shichel peor are totally exempt from tithes. It's only because of his conduct where he takes it and piles it up. It makes it look as if it's stuff that he himself cultivated, and stuff that a person cultivates. Even if you happen to be poor, you have to tithe it. So it's all a function of the impression that he creates. And therefore, as Rabbi Yitzchak says, the leket shichel peo tithes that the oni gathered and made into a pile, they become established as requiring the miser tithe to be set aside from it. Miser is the 10% that one removes. 10% is given to a Levi, 10% is then taken to Yerushalayim. The main purpose for our discussion right now is that hupu miser means it's been established as requiring tithing. And once again, this is purely rabbinic, because as we said, lek and shikol peo are in effect exempt from all tithes. Omar Ula now qualifies this ruling, and he says, Lo amoron ela besodeh. This tithe requirement is only if he made the pile in a field. Of a be'ir, if you have this poor man that labored intensively in gathering together his leket shichel peo from different places and then went into his into a backyard in the middle of a city and piled the grains up there, people aren't going to think that it's stuff that he produced from his own field. Kola is le lemilsa. There is, as we've seen already a few times before, there is a koil, there is public knowledge. Neighbors in residential communities know about the goings-on of each other. And in this case, it actually serves to benefit this poor man. People know that it's that the grain that's piled up is stuff that he had gathered from Leket Shikon Peah, and hence is truly exempt. V'omar Rabbi Yitzchak, Omar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Lozer ben Yaakov, Yaldo HaPrusa Mitefach Eino Mikadeshes Es Azroim. Here we have again laws that are applied to vineyards, and there's a law that prohibits vegetation to be planted in the proximity of a vineyard. If the vine is Pusa Mitefach, it's a dwarfed vine, a dwarfed grapevine, it does not, mekadeshes is a word meaning create prohibition. It doesn't make the plants that are planted amongst them prohibited. In other words, there's no isur kilayim. We take a look at Rashi. Eino mekadeshes es hasroim, mishum kilei akerem. It does not create the prohibition known as kilei akerem, dechtiv bu. Regarding kilayim, it says tikdash hamleya. Hazera. V'nira li, now Rashi adds an important explanation, an important qualification. He says, Dikosovar, that this Gemara, that's this teaching of Rabbi Yitzchak, is in accordance with a particular opinion on this matter. Kedamrina b'menachas kanvis v'luf asra Torah shar zroim midrabbanan inhu. When the Torah prohibits as kilayim, kileyakerem, the Torah prohibits two specific types of plants. What the translation is not important for our discussion, but in Hebrew or in Talmudic language, they're referred to as kanvus and luf. That's what the Torah prohibits. Other plants are prohibited to be planted amongst vines, but only rabbinically. Ubechihai kerem, with this unusual, let's say, this genetic aberration that produced this particular vineyard, these stunted growth vines, lo gozer rabbonon ashar zroyim. The rabbonon did not impose their rabbinic restriction that would apply to other kinds of vegetation. So true, in general, all vegetation is prohibited to be planted amongst grapevines. But that's basically a rabbinic prohibition, according to this opinion. But when the vine is so unusual, so the rabbis didn't impose their rabbinic restriction. We continue in the Gemara, Vahani Mili. This teaching, this leniency that Yalda Plus Mitefach does not create Isser Kilei HaKerem, doesn't create the rabbinic Isser of Kilei HaKerem, this is so, Shtayim Keneged Shtayim V'Achas Yetzer Zonov. That's when the vineyard in question is a vineyard with that specific configuration of two opposite two, forming what we said, described before as a square, and one fifth vine coming out from behind, Yotzezov, literally coming out as a tail. Avokule kerem maktish. However, if you have an entire vineyard that's made of these dwarfed vines, since it has significance, it's a large area that's planted with these dwarf vines, the rabbinic isur kilayim will apply. V'yomer Rabbi Yitzchok Omar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Elazar ben Yankiv. We continue at the top of Daf Mem Dalet. Mace Tofes Arba Amois Lutuma. Before we saw halacha concerning a mace Tofes Arba Amois Lekriyashma, here we have, we'll say, the same circumstances, i.e., a corpse and the same measure, four Amos. With regard to defilement. And this is, again, a rabbinic law. If you were, let us say, outdoors, you're not under the same ceiling, the same overshadow, but rather outdoors, but you're within four amos of a corpse, rabbinically speaking, you are considered tomei mace. And the reason for this is since you're so close to the corpse, a person can easily extend his arm or his clothing and not be cognizant of it at the time, thereby absorbing actual tuma doraisa, tumas oihel, so as to keep people away from this delicate situation. We impose tuma, which is generally speaking a device that creates a deterrent. So we impose automatic tuma when you're within four amos of a corpse, even if you didn't actually overshadow it. Vitana tuna, and in Mishnaic literature, we also find this phenomenon, this being referred to. We have a Tanaic source. If you take a bird's eye view of the source with our Gemara markings, and by the way, if you need to access markings, you know that you can reach us at gmarkings@gmail.com. Here we have a Tanaic source that would be much easier to learn if we had a proper illustration that accompanies this. We're going to try to explain this through words, but we highly encourage anyone who can access an illustration for this, and all power to them. Let me mention that the source is For this, Gemara is in a Mishnaic tractate called Oyolus in Seder Taras. Oyolus Perek Tezvov Mishnah Ches. And it's also in the Gemara in Bava Basra, Daf Kuf Omid Beis. Rashi makes reference to it. We're dealing with a form of burial that was quite common in the times, in Talmudic times, where the dead were buried in what's called a me'ora, a type of, literally, a cave. It's underground, where you would enter a chamber, and in the walls of the chamber there would be crypts that were dug out, and bodies of the deceased would be slipped into these crypts that were dug into the walls. These cave-like chambers might be in fact one opposite the other, and between them was called a chotzer. We'll call it a little courtyard, that one would descend into this little courtyard, which was also beneath the surface of the ground. You would descend into the courtyard and then carry the body into one of the chambers that had crypts built or carved out or dug out into the walls. So that's verbally what we've described. A very crude illustration accompanies this on the side of the Gemara. It's a we'll call it, it's an aerial view of what we have described. So you have a chotzer and the chambers and the an illustration of how the bodies would be dug would be buried into the walls of this. And this is, as I say, I emphasize this as an aerial view. Recognizing that this is all, we'll say, beneath ground surface. So, that having been said, we have Tanaic sources. It says Chotzer HaKever, and you can see on the in the illustration the Chotzer. You're looking from top down. HaOymed B'socha. If you're standing in the Chotzer, Tohor. Even though the chotzer opens into the ma'ora, there's a door-like entranceway from the chotzer into the ma'ora, and in the ma'ora there are bodies there. While you're in the chotzer, you are tohar. V'ushiu bo arba amos, divrei Beis Shammai, provided that the chotzer measures 4 by 4 amos. Beis Hillel omrim arba o tfochim. It's enough if the chotzer measures 4 tfochim. Now we have a bracketed section in which the language is not accurate. Let's skip the bracketed section first to get the accurate reading of this source. Bamed vorm amurim. When does Beis Hillel provide you with this extreme leniency that you can be in the chotzer that's actually very squalid? It's only 4 by 4 tfachim and you remain tohar. That's when the access to the chotzer is minatzad, is from the side. My impression is it would be a type of, let's say, ramp like, we don't have an illustration for this, but imagine a type of either stairs or ramp descending from the surface down into the chotzer from the side. In other words, you're not coming from on top of the ma'ora in order to get into the chotzer. Avol pischo milamalo. If there is no ramp going down into it, you have to lower yourself from above the chotzer into the chotzer. No ramp, no stairs. In a case like that, it's there's a great chance that you might overshadow the cave, the ma'ora itself, and therefore, in order to provide you with a status of tara in a chotzer like that, we say arba amos. It has to measure 4 by 4 amos. V'hani mili chotzer hakever. The laws we just taught apply to a a chotzer of a grave site, like we've described, the mesaima mechitza, where there are walls that clearly demarcate where the bodies are buried, that namely in the ma'ora, and the chotzer, which is outside those mechitzas, outside those walls. In other words, the source that gave us the possibility of remaining tohor is in the case of a chotzer hakever, but avol meis ba'almo, but a body simply lying outside, then tofis. It grabs you. Now the dead isn't going to grab you for anything, but it includes you in its tumah if you're within 4 amos of it. Now this last point needs further clarification, further explanation. We are making a distinction between a meis ba'alma, that means a body, a corpse that's lying outside, versus the case of the chotzer hakever. In the case of the chotzer hakever, if that we'll call courtyard measures 4x4, and you're standing in that chotzer, you might be standing at a point that's within 4 amos of a body, but the body is in the ma'ora. There's a mechitza between you and the body. Therefore, you might very well be within 4 amos of the body, but as the Gemara says, mesaima mechitza, there's a wall that serves as a demarcation. So we can declare you're being tahor. However, when you're outdoors and there's no point of demarcation, you're just close to a body without a wall between you, without a doorway or entranceway between you, then as soon as you're within 4 amos of it, you become tamei. We skipped the section of the source. We said that what's within the brackets turns out to be inaccurate. So let's go over the bracketed section. Start a couple words before. Beis Hillel omrim arba tvachim. Beis Hillel said that the chotzer hakever can measure as little as 4 tvachim, and you remain tohor. We continue in the brackets, bearing in mind this is not accurate. Bamed v'mamurim. Beis Hillel says, when is 4 tvachim enough? Shepischa l'milamalo. When the entrance is from directly above. But if the entrance is a type of ramp or stairways coming down from the side, divrei hakol arba amos, everyone will agree, even Beis Hillel will say that the chotzer has to measure 4x4 amos, a much larger area. The Gemara here within our, we'll say, internal bracketed section raises a question with that qualification. Klape laya means, where are you going? Adaraba, min hatsad, midrid vinofik. If anything, when the entranceway is coming down from the side, you are midrid vinofik, midrid, like the word midron, means you're descending gradually, easily into the chotzer. And you can leave that way without having to deal with the walls of the chotzer. Milamala, however, if the descent into the chotzer is strictly from above, meaning directly above, there are no stairs or ramp going into the chotzer. How do you get into the chotzer? Maybe by holding by grabbing the walls, maybe with a rope, whatever. But it's not an easy access, and as a result of that, the Gemara says, "Milamali yafshav de lo mayil." It's like impossible to avoid overshadowing. So, if it's going to be, let's say, a chotzer that's only 4x4 tvachim, and you're descending into it from above, you're inevitably going to be overshadowing the ma'ara where the bodies are located. Ela, so therefore, as far as measurements are concerned, Bamed v'mamurin, when do we say that 4 tvachim is enough? That's shepischa min atzad. That's when the entrance into the chotzer, measuring so little as 4 tvachim, is from the side. Okay, so if you're descending from stairs or a ramp down from the sides, you're not encountering any element of overshadowing the ma'ara. Avol pischa milamala, if the entrance is from above, you're going to need a much larger area for the chotzer in order to avoid overshadowing. Therefore, in such a case, with pischos milamala, arba amos. But as we said, once you're in the chotzer itself, which has the proper dimensions, as far as your personal proximity to a corpse, it might be very much within 4 amos, just on the other side of the wall. But you remain tohor. And as the Gemara says, vahani mili, this provision of tahara is chotzer hakever. That's when you're in that little courtyard entering the ma'oris. The Mesaim and Mechitza, because there you have definitive walls between the Chotzer and where the bodies are located, i.e. in the Ma'oros. Avol Meis Ba'alma, but a body lying outside, Tophis, the body will include you within its 4 amos. You've got to be more than 4 amos away from the body in order to avoid Tumah. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you need to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.